Hello and welcome. This is episode 30 of the Tech Reformation.
Wow!
Woohoo!
I'm Ben.
I'm Craig.
And I'm Derek. So my technology thwarted me this week. It was in the middle of the night. Rainy was having a particularly bad night as far as trying to stay asleep. So I was soothing her and doing all the fatherly things that a father should do when their child is up at 1:30 in the morning for 3 hours straight. And I finally got her, like, kind of soothed to sleep. She was almost there. And then she lost her pacifier and it rolled on the floor and I couldn't find it. And then I could just hear her starting to do her little, like, So I quick rushed over to my phone and I picked it up to because I used it as my flashlight.
And you shoved the phone in her mouth as a pacifier.
No, I didn't.
Oh,
I would never do that.
My bad.
That's my phone you're talking about.
Also, it's your child.
So I pick up my phone, I go to turn on the light, and it's updating. It is updating the OS in the middle of my daughter's tantrum.
Yeah, they set them to do that at night now so that it won't bother you.
I know. It's such a convenient feature until you need it for a friggin' flashlight in the middle of the night and it's bad news.
Can't you just turn the actual light on? Do you not have actual lights in your daughter's room?
Yeah, but that wakes her up even more.
A light switch. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought a phone would be super bright.
Well, I'm looking around under her bed as opposed to right in her eye sockets, so
yeah,
there's
true.
The difference.
My wife and I, in our nursery that we recently finished setting up, we installed those light globes that are like exposed filament ones, so you can see, like, they're really big.
Oh, cool. Yeah, like, those.
Ball shape, and you can see the filament glowing, but they're really dim. Mm-hmm. So they look funky, but they're also quite dim. So you could read by them, but that's about it. You wouldn't sort of want to, try and use it to, I don't know, figure out something really hard to look at. It was just kind of, they're just kind of a light, not a really bright light.
Right.
So hopefully we'll avoid such problems.
Derek, I heard something else happened this week for you.
Yes, it did. I was just promoted to foreman at my job this week, which is super exciting.
Oh yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. So now I have this dilemma with my phone situation, because they offer you a phone as you get a phone with a phone plan, you get on their unlimited plan, it's great. But
yep.
The free phones, the phones that they offer are 2 cycles ago. So they're offering Android phones from like 2 years ago and the iPhone 5S.
Who knows what those even are? Because there's like 2,000 Android phones.
Well,
out
like Galaxies and stuff, But they're
Galaxy
only offering
ones.
But they are only offering an iPhone 5S. So, and I already have an iPhone 5S, and I want a Plus phone at some point. So this is where my dilemma lies, and I have to figure this out.
So your dilemma is that you would get the same phone you've already got, but on a free plan. I don't see the dilemma.
Well, the thing is, I can't upgrade whenever I want to. That's the problem.
Ben's trying to pick a hole in what I just said, but he can't because it's true.
No, I am not trying to pick holes in anything anyone says.
When you raise your eyebrows like that, when you raise only one, it makes me very suspicious of what you're thinking. Yeah. I actually am jealous because I can't do that. If I raise one, I raise them both. I don't have that kind of dexterity.
Pro wrestling? Did you ever watch pro wrestling?
Unfortunately, yes, I've seen some.
I've seen a little bit.
Are you familiar with Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
Yes. I know him not from wrestling.
Do you know how he used to say, "Can you smell what The Rock is cooking?"
Yes.
And he would always do the eyebrow like this.
Yeah. Do you know that I think
that's
I
really
put
funny
pro wrestling, like that kind of wrestling, on the same par as kind of like the prosperity gospel? Like, it's one of those things America should just realize how bad it was and stopped exporting
Wait
it.
Wait a minute.
No, come on.
That's a whole other conversation.
The only thing it was fun for was Nintendo games, where you actually got to like grab people by the neck and throw them around the room and hit them with chairs. That was kind of fun.
More cheat codes. Now I'm just saying things.
Yeah, I haven't been sleeping great either, Derek, because our baby isn't even born yet and it's already doing lots of kicking and punching and moving its elbows along my wife's whole midsection, you know, at 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning. So,
yep, it'll do that. Quick, before we go, I know we get to move on, but Ben, you also have some news from the past couple weeks as well.
Oh, yeah, I haven't been here in a while. I bought a house.
And congratulations on that, my friend.
Yes, thank you. We are very excited. We have to do some remodeling, though, because, you know, I mean, it's just like the house has had one owner, and it was built in 55, and so, you know, it's in great condition, what's there, but, you know, it looks like it's the 60s or 70s, so we're going to paint some stuff and build some stuff in the kitchen and do some stuff like that. It'll be fun.
You could make that a feature. Welcome to the 60s. It's the Robin House. We live in happy days.
I don't know. Probably we won't do that.
You need to take pictures, though, before you start doing things. Like, take pictures of the entire house and then do everything you're going to do and then just keep those pictures, because I have a lot of fun. Like, I did a lot of work on my house before it's finished, and I took pictures before we did that, and I'm so glad we did, because the house looks so ugly before, and I feel so good about myself whenever I look at them. So, nice. Hey, you already did the legwork. Ben's showing me these pictures on his phone right now. This is good radio.
What's with the stuff around the top of the walls?
It's called wallpaper, and I guess it was very trendy back in the day.
Ah, okay. I couldn't tell if it was wallpaper or just marks on the walls. Anyway, this is terrible radio.
Yeah.
Get into the news.
And we're into Tech You Should Know, the part of the show where we bring you 7 tech topics from throughout the past week that we feel are worth your consideration. First up, WhatsApp encryption could be the subject of the next Justice Department showdown. As Apple has been embroiled in the contentious fight with the United States Justice Department, another fight has been brewing over the nature of secure communications. The department is apparently setting its sights on WhatsApp and its encrypted communications. They're currently weighing how to move forward with an ongoing investigation that has run into trouble because of the service's encryption. A federal judge has okayed a wiretap order during the course of the investigation, but because the communications being tapped is encrypted, they can't see what's being said. So they haven't decided how to proceed with the case, and they're internally debating this at the moment.
Do you use WhatsApp, Derek?
I do not. I use iMessage.
Okay, I don't either. I do too.
Yeah.
And Facebook Messenger.
Mm-hmm. That's about right. Xbox Live now supports cross-platform multiplayer with PS4. Microsoft has just announced that game developers can now create cross-platform multiplayer modes that work with other consoles and operating systems. Historically, cross-platform play was restricted by Microsoft, as the Xbox Live was the first successful multiplayer network for consoles. The PlayStation Network only appeared with the PS3. But now that the Xbox One is lagging behind, Microsoft has presented an olive branch for the good of all gamers. The first game to get cross-platform multiplayer will be Rocket League, and the rest is up to developers.
I remember when Nintendo came out with their online gaming chat system thing, and Xbox Live had become so toxic, like just children who all they did was play video games, and
they just swore blue streaks at everyone they met.
Yeah. So they, like, Nintendo really, really locked that down on the Wii to the point that it was not fun anymore.
Right.
It was, like, all anonymous, and, like, it was horrible.
I think it's probably evened out. I mean, I'm not I don't have an Xbox or a PlayStation, so I can't speak to this, but I'm guessing it's mellowed out over time as they've had more diverse people come into playing live across networks. Apple Music secures rights to mixes and DJ mixes. I think this is pretty cool. So while mixes and DJ mixes can be popular, getting the streaming rights to them can be a very complex business, especially when a single mix can contain elements owned by up to 60 different rights holders. But an agreement between Apple and digital distributor Dubset means that Apple Music now has the right to stream many thousands of mix tracks, putting mashups and hour-long mixes that have existed only underground on the world's second-largest music streaming service. The way Dubset is able to accomplish this is by using a proprietary technology called MixBank to analyze a remix or long-form DJ mix file, identify recordings inside the file, and properly pay both record labels and music publishers. Instagram is about to go algorithmic, and of course the Instagram community is already starting to implode. The photo sharing company wants to make your world even more customized for you and your likes by organizing your feed in such a way that it shows you what it thinks you want to see first.
Want Instagram to implode.
Instagram explains the move as a response to the fact that people miss on average, 70% of their feeds, saying, quote, "As Instagram has grown, it's become harder to keep up with all the photos and videos people share. This means you often don't see the posts you might care about the most," unquote.
Ben, do you just want it to implode because you prefer Snapchat?
No. Will you just quit bringing up Snapchat? Snapchat is cool. Sorry you're too old to appreciate Snapchat.
Okay.
Dad.
Ooh, we throw it down. Getting spicy.
Just kidding.
There's no indication when Instagram will start shifting posts around, but you can most likely expect it in the next few months. Nike has introduced its first self-lacing shoes available for the public. The Nike HyperAdapt 1.0 will be the first real Nike shoe to implement the adaptive lacing tech, and it's supposed to work just like it did for Marty McFly. When you step into the shoe, your heel will hit a sensor, and the system will automatically tighten the laces for you. You can also adjust how tight the power laces get with a button on the side of the shoe. The Nike HyperAdapt 1.0 is supposed to come out during the holiday season of 2016 in three different colors. No word on price yet.
Unfortunately, they don't look enough like the actual shoe in the movies, but cool that they've got the technology happening.
Yeah.
We have the technology. We can make him better, faster, stronger.
PlayStation VR will launch in October for $399. Though not of the same quality as some of its competitors, the PlayStation VR headset certainly comes at the lowest price point yet for a VR headset, disregarding all the silly smartphone VR implementations. Though that price doesn't include the required PlayStation camera and PlayStation Move controllers, which together would cost around $100. And actually, I did read an article today that PlayStation has announced a bundle that will include everything that you need for $500.
You think that Google Cardboard is silly?
No, I was. It's, but it's not. It's an interesting experiment, but it's not something that is hardcore, so to speak. Like it's good. Well, no, it is VR, and it's good that Google is doing it, but it's not the serious kind of VR that people are expecting with gaming and games and stuff.
It's not fully immersive.
Right.
Maybe? I don't know.
Well, and it's, you can't do a whole lot with it. You've got apps, you've got different, you know, little demos, but it's not programmed to be something that is flexible for, you know, anything that you program for it. And finally this week, Kickstarter buys Drip, a community for independent musicians. Kickstarter has made its first acquisition after the crowdfunding site picked up Drip. This week, a service that lets music artists engage with fans with new work and previews while drawing revenue from the platform. The Kickstarter CEO, Yancey Stickler, has said that many of the company have admired Drip over the years and goes on to say that the companies are on similar paths, citing both companies' drive to encourage a more vibrant creative culture. It's not clear where the acquisition would come into play in Kickstarter's focus, but I'm sure we'll see in the next few years. And that concludes this week's Tech You Should Know.
Now it's time for Tech You Should Use, the part of the show where we feature one technology and talk in detail about what it does and what it can do for you, and why you should use it. Tech You Should Use this week, LastPass Authenticator. Did you guys see this come through?
I have not. I have one password which has this already.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It has the codes?
Yeah. Yep.
Does it have the Easy Access Authenticate?
I'm not sure what you mean by that. Explain.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So this is really cool. And it's really about two-factor authentication. Everyone should, just let me take a moment here. Everyone should get two-factor authentication. In the last like month or two, I have helped two separate organizations, nonprofits, with email passwords that were hacked or emails that were sent that shouldn't have been, which were asking for money. Both times, thankfully, no money was transferred. That being said, if you will simply activate two-factor authentication on your Gmail or your email account, then it could stop this issue because no one will be able to get just your password and get into your email address and then send whatever they want. They have to have something you always have on you physically, which is your phone. So you can get a, what this is you already use a password to get into your email. So say your password is cat dog, right? Well, then if someone gets cat dog, then they can get into your email. But if you use two-factor authentication, you can use a separate app or a text message. They can do it in text messages with a six-digit code. It's just six numbers that you also need to get in. And those are randomized and they're changed every couple of minutes, right? So at any point in time, the six-digit code is not the same as it was 3 minutes ago because it's already changed. So you have to have both your password and the code to get into your account. That way, if someone hacks your password, you don't have a problem. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the advance this week is that LastPass has built an authenticator app that does the standard two-factor authentication code thing. There's another one called Google Authenticator that's pretty popular, and there's lots of others that are smaller. But the coolest thing is that with LastPass, if you use two-factor authentication in your LastPass account, which is your password vault, you can quickly authenticate the two-factor step. So you type in your master password, and then on your phone, a notification pops up that you can swipe and approve or reject. And that's it. You don't have to enter the code.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. The only trouble is, it only works with LastPass right now. But I know that because they are doing this, and as soon as more people jump on, it's free to do if you already have LastPass. As more people jump on, I'm sure that Google will implement something similar and so on and so forth. And LastPass might be able to do it with other accounts as well. I'm not sure how that works from a technical perspective. Hmm. But right now, it's just with your LastPass account. And I already had two-factor authentication with my Google Authenticator, so it was a no-brainer for me to just switch over to LastPass and just put all my codes in there.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. So 1Password doesn't do the nifty little thing you said at the end where you just swipe and approve, you know, approve access to whatever site or to itself, because 1Password doesn't exist as a web service. Syncs via Dropbox. It sits on your device or on your computer. So that wouldn't really work very well. But it does keep the two-factor. You can set it up to keep the two-factor codes to, you know, you can just go in there on your computer or on your phone to get those codes and put them in. That's a handy little plus, though, that they're working on that.
Yeah.
Are they working
I thought it was pretty neat.
Are they working on integrating with other services? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's technically possible because I don't know how the implementation itself works. Mm-hmm. But what I was saying was other companies like Google will no doubt copy this in, you know, who knows, a couple of months, a couple of weeks. It depends on how many people adopt it and how quickly and how much people ask for it. Mm-hmm. But so if you just get the generic Google Authenticator app, it does the same thing with the codes. And you can set up two-factor authentication on any account that allows it with its own unique code with any of these authenticator apps. But the cool thing about LastPass is you can do the approve deny thing right from your lock screen, mm-hmm. which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I will not be surprised if next week or next month there Google is saying that they've done this also.
Yeah, that's a nice implementation of that.
Yeah. And that concludes Tech You Should Use this week.
So for this week, for Theology from the Headlines, we are going to be talking about a video by CGP Grey, a YouTuber, who talks about the trouble with transporters. We're going to play that audio right now, and then we'll come back and discuss it.
In Star Trek, the transporter moves you from one spot to another, saving on shuttle fuel and special effects budgets. In Universe, it's the safest way to travel. Yes, sometimes two guys die horrible mutilated deaths under rare circumstances, but trillions of individuals transport to work every morning without a hiccup. But what if the transporter isn't as safe as claimed? What if the death rate isn't point almost nothing percent, but 100% because the transporter is a suicide box? First, how does the transporter work? There are technical manuals with pages and pages of hilariously over-specific details that yet say so little. Star Trek is nothing if not consistently inconsistent, but taking the most common elements, first, the transporter scans you down to the quark, takes apart your atoms, and sends the pieces of you to the destination for reassembly. But is it you on the other end, or a copy that thinks it's you? Well, who is you? That's a hell of a big question, but let's try to be good scientists about it. We don't assume there's a magic part of you that can't be measured. After all, if it can't be measured, that means, by definition, it can't affect anything. So Occam's razor it away, and we take you as you seem to be, a collection of atoms arranged to think they're you. And because the arrangement of atoms in post-transport you is exactly the same as pre-transport, you must be you. Case closed. But you might still have this nagging feeling that your experience of stepping into the transporter will be a funny sound, a bright light, then nothingness eternal. While down on the planet, a brand new life, complete with all your memories up to the moment before your death, popped into existence and assumed it's you. How could it otherwise? It lives a life as short as the mission, and a new creature with the memories of you both makes it back to the ship. If true, multiply this by all the life forms in all the ships in all the star systems, and this transport technology is a silent Holocaust, which makes an average episode of Trek rather grim watching, and it's a small mercy when a crew member takes the turbo lift rather than site-to-site transport. But again, the measurements check out, so perhaps we're being paranoid and we're already late for our holiday on Risa, so just step inside already. But atom reassembly is the optimistic version and can't be how the transporter really works, because sometimes accidents combine two crew into one or split one into two. There aren't enough atoms in you to make a second you, so the transporter has to be turning atoms into energy and energy into atoms. You are destroyed, used to charge a battery, then recreated anew. This really seems like death, but the philosophy majors in the room are dying to bring up the ship of Theseus now, so fine. You take this ship on an adventure. As parts get worn, you replace each until eventually no piece is original. When you return, is the ship of Theseus still the same ship of Theseus you left on? Seems so, and this is what your body does daily via eating, bringing in new atoms, and excreting, losing atoms. Compare to the Cutty Sark, a colonial tea ship burned down and restored with new parts. Is it still the same Cutty Sark? The result is the same, all new parts, only the time it took is different. If you're happy ship of Theseusing through life, as you already do, then getting Cutty Sarked by transport shouldn't matter, right? However, step into a working transporter with a broken disassembler and death is revealed. Pre-transport and post-transport you can disagree on who is you. And when Scotty tells pre-transport you, sorry, the disassembler's broken, give us a minute to fix it, you aren't going to wait around. That a copy of you made it to the destination is no consolation. The transporter has to be a suicide box. Okay, so why worry about the metaphysical implications of fictional technology? Because the transporter points us to the problem of consciousness. We were quick to cut out the idea of the unmeasurable before because everything we can measure about the copy is identical. But there is something unmeasurably different. The transporter forces confrontation with the possibility that there's something about being a conscious creature that isn't measurable from the outside. Did we not contain conscious brains ourselves, how would we know that other brains are conscious? Truth be told, you can really only know that you are conscious, and it seems polite to give other people the benefit of the doubt. But were a computer to claim that it was conscious, how would you know? Your continuous stream of consciousness is your life, and you are the only one who can experience it, who can know if it exists and if it is continuous. And transporters are scary because they cause breaks in that consciousness, making a copy that lives the life that you have left with no one the wiser, with no one able to be wiser. And while transporters aren't real, breaks in consciousness are. If you go for surgery, when they put you under, you can't be sure if it's you that woke up. For that matter, your bed might be a suicide machine. Every night's slip into unconsciousness, the warm embrace of the Reaper, and every morning the first and only day of a new creature's conscious life. It's impossible to know. Sleep well tonight.
And we're back.
So, this poses a very interesting set of questions. It's a little bit mind-blowing, and I'm sure, and for those of you in the audience, it might not be a bad idea to go watch the video. It's linked in the show notes a couple times before we go into this discussion, because it is a little bit mind-blowing. So what we're talking about is the difference between the physical and the immaterial, and whether or not the immaterial exists in this case of the transporter. And clearly, I think we have someone talking from an atheist or a purely materialistic point of view on the side.
He's got to be an atheist if he's a materialist.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he is. I can pretty much confirm he wants nothing to do with religion. Just listening to his podcasts. He's a fascinating person, but yeah, not someone you want to talk to you about this stuff. But yeah, what are your initial thoughts on this stuff, guys? I guess, where do we start?
Yeah, I have two thoughts. At the outset, I just want to say this last 5 minutes is the single greatest piece of evidence I have found to date of the simple fact that it is intellectual suicide not to be a Christian. Mm-hmm. Because any other worldview boils down into futility, madness, just insanity. Like, some of the comments that were made about what makes you, you. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll get into this, but it's just, yeah, I was doing the Home Alone a couple of times as I was watching this thing. like I was like, because I just couldn't believe what was being said. It's madness. But any good presuppositionalist is probably salivating after hearing that also, because it's like, man, there's so much content to just tear apart, just presuppositions that were asserted but not defended, or just assumed and not even said. And man,
Greg, did you have any initial thoughts?
Yeah, and I've thought the same sort of thing, to be honest. There were claims made that had no backing that probably frustrated me the most, more so than just the guy's worldview and where it was coming from. I think we encounter that pretty frequently from a naturalistic materialist point of view. But he said at one point fairly early on, about 1 minute in exactly, I think it was, he said, or pretty close to, if it can't be measured, it can't affect anything. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know how he backs that up. How do you measure the value of a human being, for example? How does he measure his own value? How does he measure the quality of his sleep each night? Do you know what I mean? Like, there are things that are... You can kind of say, well, it's valuable or it was good, but it's not actually something you can empirically measure and quantify very easily. And so I think even a statement like that is just one of those things where they throw it into the conversation and move along as if there was no concessions needing to be made there. Yeah. There was several of those, but that was the first one that I just came across and went, okay, you know, in doing that within the first minute, he is saying that anything that we can't, basically anything that we can't see and touch about ourselves is irrelevant. The only thing that matters about us is our matter. Mm-hmm. And so from that point, he's obviously then able to go on and try and support that with freaking people out about going to bed at night and having operations. and yeah, I just thought it was pretty crazy.
Sorry, I would defend CGP Grey by saying that he would be entirely consistent with what he has said as far as the value of things, and he's an incredibly pragmatic person, that he would say that, you know, love is an illusion type of things.
But it's that way.
They're good things to play along to, because, you know, it's enjoyable, like those kinds of things. I don't know that he would say that specifically, but yeah. He would try to remain as as accurate as possible to those things.
But love is a good example, right? Again, how do you quantifiably measure the quality of love between two people? Does he have a mother or a father or a wife?
Well, there's synapses firing in his brain, and these things tell him that he feels this way about a person, and so this is how, you know, you live your life. He's a very amusing person.
So love isn't love, it's just a chemical reaction.
That's fine, but he doesn't actually live consistently with his worldview.
Right.
It would be impossible. I bet if I stole some of his things, he would be pretty annoyed. I bet you if I stripped this video off of YouTube, uploaded it to my own account, and then promoted it and got, you know, 12 million views or whatever, mm-hmm. he'd be pretty annoyed.
Yep.
And he would be, he might assert something like copyright infringement, but what is that if we're just Stardust banging around?
Well, and the fact that he got out of bed the morning that he made that video to make that video, or the mornings, plural, to make that video, means that he thinks that it's worthwhile doing so. And in a world where there's nothing but matter bumping around on the, you know, on the surface of the planet, then why make a video to try and convince someone else of your view if their view mm-hmm. doesn't matter and neither does yours? Mm-hmm. I think getting out of bed in the morning is like when I actually have conversations with atheists, I'm like, why do you get up and go to work? Why? Like, why do you not just lie on a bed and look at the ceiling all day, every day?
And they go, gotta survive, man.
All right. Yeah, yeah, but exactly why? It doesn't matter if it's just matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm afraid folks are going to hear me. I have watched many a debate on this subject, and usually people jump to the conclusion that I'm saying, if you're an atheist, you can't do good things. I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. People do moral things all the time who are atheists. What I'm saying is, you have no epistemological foundation for the good things you do. You would never be able to explain to me why good is good, because you don't have a foundation for that, mm-hmm. unless you're a Christian.
Well, yeah, you have a foundation, but your foundation has to be relative by nature. So you can have, you can say you hold to a foundation, but so I've come across a couple of things. I've come across people who say, "Well, I do have a foundation, but it's based on societal preference, so like the common thinking of society, or it's my own personal preference, which we all know is futility because that's pure relativism."
Well, yeah, my point is that any other foundation besides Christian theism is either arbitrary or inconsistent, either with itself or with the world we live in. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's really fun and it's all three.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which, you know, I mean, it's like I said, it's intellectual suicide not to be a Christian.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, the epistemological backflips.
Epistemology, the theory of knowledge, especially with regard to its methods, validity, and scope. Epistemology is the investigation of what distinguishes justified belief from opinion.
That were made, in my opinion, to argue that God doesn't exist, so that he can't stand in judgment over me or have any claim on my life. They were just astounding, mm-hmm. and I really was astonished by some of the assertions that were made. My favorite was, to be a good scientist, let's mm-hmm. all be good scientists and just pretend like there's only material things. Mm-hmm. Funny story, though, and I was actually talking to somebody about this this weekend. There's no foundation for science if you're not a Christian theist either. Because in order to do science, what is science? Science is something that's measurable, repeatable, and observable. You have to have all three, right? You can't have, let's just take one, repeatable. You cannot have repeatable experiments if you don't have something called the uniformity of nature, which at a base level, at like a high level, basically I can trust that gravity today will be the same tomorrow. I can trust that gravity yesterday will be the same in 10 years. Well, again, if you don't have a triune God who's creator and sustainer of the universe, you have no foundation for that. Mm-hmm. You still assume it's there and you still do science based on it because it is there, but you can't explain where it came from or why it exists. Mm-hmm. That's the trouble. So how would you do science without the uniformity of nature? You can't.
The real frustration is people say, I don't need a justification for where it came from. So that's, I'm not agreeing with that, but that's their pushback, is that it doesn't matter where it comes from. The point is it's there, and so let's just forget about it and move on. Mm-hmm. But again...
But it does matter because it affects our lives.
It does, yeah. And also, you are you're using science to justify things, and so I think it makes sense that people would ask that you use something to justify the validity of your science that you're using to justify those things, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's fair that we do ask that question and say, well, okay, you keep appealing to science. How do you know that science is valid? how do you know that experimentation and repeatability yeah. of results is valid?
Nothing is just a brute fact. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd like to get away from the category of, you know, being presuppositionally apologetically arguing, you know, against this video, and try to go through some of these thought experiments through a Christian worldview. And it, clearly, the difference between C.G.P. Gray's perspective and our perspective is that he would not believe in a soul or an immaterial part of us that is us, and we would. We have the Bible that tells us that that we have souls, and that this is a very real part of us, that we are soul and flesh, and all of this. So, going through some of these perspectives, and we're just talking the thought experiment of teleporters. Clearly, none of these exist yet, but it's fun to think about. So the ship of Theseus was talked about. That is the example where there is a ship that is going on a trip, that it keeps getting, you know, different parts of the boat keep getting broken or destroyed, and they're replaced over time, so that eventually when you get to your destination, it's an entirely new ship. So, and is that still the same ship that it was when it left? So that's the first one. How do we respond to that as humans, who essentially are the ships of Theseus going through life? Our physical matter has transformed entirely since we are since we were a baby to when we, you know, have died.
I want to answer that, but I can't stop being presuppositional, because that's the only way to respond to this.
Oh yeah, no.
From the Bible.
Now we have to. I mean, now we're responding to this biblically, like with the Christian worldview. Yeah, we'll still be presuppositional. I think I may have gotten my thoughts mixed there when I was saying let's stop being presuppositional. But we will always be presuppositional as good Christian apologists.
Uh oh, you're gonna get in trouble for that last comment.
Well, to some extent. Okay, we could go way in the weeds on that one. We're not going to right now. Email us if you have a problem. All right, go, Ben.
Angry emails, they're our favorite.
Greg Kokel's not presup, and we all like him, so.
He's
partially presup.
To some extent.
Yeah, he's got some presup in him. Anyway, maybe he's more cumulative case. Anyway, doesn't matter. That's not even really what we're talking about, is apologetic method. The point is, how do we respond to the ship of Theseus? Mm-hmm. Is that what it was called?
Since we are the ship of Theseus going through life, our parts are completely different now than from what they were when we started life.
Not all of our parts.
Yes, not all of our parts.
That's the problem, is the assumption was made that we are the ship. No, we're not a ship. A ship has no immaterial aspect. Mm-hmm. A human being does. That's the problem. You're going to come back. Everything we respond to, I would venture a guess, is going to come back to materialism versus immaterialism. Mm-hmm. Do you believe in the supernatural or don't you? Since he doesn't, he can compare us to a ship. I can't do that because I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. We're not just a ship. A ship doesn't have a soul. A ship isn't the image of God. It's impossible for me to make the connection in the way he's making it. I understand the philosophical problem of the ship of Theseus, and I think it's really fun to think about, but I can't do the same thing with a human being, because there are immaterial aspects of a human which make that person a person.
So,
do you know, a few episodes ago, sorry, Derek, just to jump in on that exact point while we've got it. A few episodes ago, I can't remember exactly what the discussion was, but this topic came up. Are we just a body that, a soul that lives in a body? Mm-hmm. And Tank sort of convinced Ben, I think. No, Ben convinced Tank, or Ben pointed out to Tank that you shouldn't separate them like that. And that, you know, we are a combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
So Ben, how would you still agree with that? Bearing in mind the ship of Theseus, so you're saying it's the addition of the soul. So the body is still important, the ship itself is still important, but it's the addition of something else to that that makes it ultimately different.
Yeah, let me say it briefly. I am more than my body, but I'm not less. So I'm not contradicting myself from a few weeks ago in any sense, because
sorry, I'm not
we
saying
are...
that you were, but yeah.
Okay, yeah. We are body and soul, yes. The complete person, the complete human being is body and soul. You're not less than your body. You're not less than your soul, but you are more than each because you're both. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? The ship of Theseus doesn't have a soul aspect. It doesn't have an immaterial aspect. It's only material. And so that's the issue.
Yep.
I mean, I suppose you could argue that maybe there's an immaterial sense of relationship with other things like human beings. So if we take Theseus into account for a second, he owns the ship. And so that immaterial relationship that exists there has something to do with the ship. But you still can't make the comparison between the ship and the human. Mm-hmm. I won't let a trade be made between ship and human because they're not... What's the word I'm looking for here?
It's apples and oranges, a little bit.
Yeah, they're not synonymous. That's the word I was looking for. One more thing.
Yes.
If you say that there's no supernatural, even if you let yourself assume that for the sake of argument, you've just said that there's no God, because God the Father, Jesus says, is spirit, and the true worshipers will worship in spirit and in truth. Mm-hmm. Spirit is not material, it's immaterial.
Yes.
And yet God the Father is a person. Mm-hmm. So there is a person who exists, persons who exist, who do not have a material aspect, and yet they are still persons. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It bears in mind the discussion on ship versus human, material versus immaterial. Go ahead.
Okay, so moving on to the example of the Cutty Sark, the ship that was destroyed and then completely made exactly the way it was, but with different material. And the question compared with the ship of Theseus, most people would say the ship of Theseus, it's the same ship. But with the Cutty Sark, you have a complete destruction and a complete reassembly. And is that with different parts, which is essentially the same thing with the ship of Theseus. And I know we can't really compare the ships with humans, but I think this has an interesting, there's an interesting thought experiment behind this, so the Cutty Sark in the case of the ships would be pretty much exactly the same as the ship of Theseus. But
we
when
can
it comes
compare
to
the
humans,
two ships, yeah.
Yeah, but when it comes to the human aspect, I think this thought experiment is very different, because as with the ship of Theseus, we have an immaterial part of us that is consistent throughout our life. That is very much... that is kind of what keeps us. And with the Cutty Sark, we now have a complete destruction followed by a reassembly, which is essentially what this thing with the transporters is suggesting. So, what happens with the soul in that case? If we are completely disassembled and reassembled on another side, can that possibly be the same soul that we once had? Or have we created does that new creature have a new soul given by God? What do we do with this kind of thinking?
Well, there's another problem too. The word creature was used, right? Mm-hmm. Are we creating a new human being?
Right. That's essentially what we would be doing. Killing the old human being, creating a new one. That is exactly like us. Does that new human being even have a soul? Can we say that it has a soul? Because it was not created in the normal ways that humans are created. Go ahead, Craig.
There's two things that I think about that. One is that I would say that God is in control of where our souls are, mm-hmm. where they live, what happens to them. God is ultimately in control of what happens to our soul for eternity. And so to be messing around with this kind of thing, like if this was a practical thing and we're like, hey, we're actually ready to stick someone in a teleporter and see if it works, I'd be going, you are making a big assumption if people were thinking that, if these guys could actually admit that there is something about people that is not just matter, then to assume that it would be transported to wherever their material parts are transported to and the person would continue to exist is an assumption. I think, you know, that God may consider that suicide, mm-hmm. sort of taking science into your own hands and taking your life into your own hands through science and trying to uncreate and recreate yourself somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I don't know what God thinks of that, but it could be sinful or it could just be stupid. Who knows? The second thing is I think there's an importance in the biblical topic of resurrection So Jesus wasn't recreated after he died.
Mm-hmm.
He rose again from the dead. And when we join him in glory, we will have glorified bodies, not alien bodies, I guess, like not some random. I'm assuming we probably won't have, you know, 25 legs and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When Jesus appeared to the disciples after his resurrection, he still had representation of a human form. His body was just different. So, yeah, I think there's significance in that in relation to this topic as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It sounds like we're talking about the origin of the soul at this point.
A little bit, yeah.
And so just, I learned, this is one of the things I've learned in Downline over the last couple months. We had a talk on basically the doctrine of man. And so there are three, historically, there are three theological views, two of which are biblical or Christian, and one of which is not. And I'll explain all three just very briefly. The first one is traducianism, which I believe is historically the more reformed one, just meaning that people who identify as reformed would hold this view as far as soul origin. And that is that the soul is generated by the physical parents along with the physical body. So in conception happens, there's a human being in the womb who is being, I don't know the right word, formed, I guess we'll go with. Mm-hmm. And while that physical formation is happening, there's also a soul formation that happens and is passed on from physical parents. The second view is called creationism, which is the view that God creates a new soul when a human being is conceived. So the physical part's passed on from physical parents, but the soul is given by God as the forming is happening in the womb, or maybe at conception. I'm not sure when they would chronologically put the origin point in that view. Mm-hmm. And then the third view is the Mormon view, which is souls are eternal. They were created at Genesis 1:1, creation of everything, mm-hmm. and that God puts the eternal soul into a body when the body's created by the physical parents. Obviously, that one's not biblical. It's the Mormon view, but it is a third perspective on the origin of the soul. So you have traducianism, the soul's passed on from physical parents. Creationism, the soul is created by God and put in the body at a point in time. And then the third view, souls are eternal, created in the beginning with the heavens and the earth, and they're put in the physical body at a point in time when conception happens.
Mm-hmm. So where would you fall in among those three? Well, among those two, really. I guess you only have two options there.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really done a whole lot of research on it. I'm not exactly sure how much it bears on this specific discussion. I suppose if we say that the transporter, you know, one of the ways that he said the transporter might work was basically cloning. Mm-hmm. And so you kill the first one and the second one exists, mm-hmm. but the second one's a new something, mm-hmm. a new creature is what he said.
Yep.
And so if you want to use that word, then I suppose if you're a traducian, you can't say that that's a human being because the soul's passed on from physical parents.
Exactly.
So if it's a clone, if it's a new thing, and you believe that the soul was passed on physically in some way, or by physical parents, I shouldn't say physically because it's immaterial, then you would say that's not a human, I guess. And so if you're a creationist or a creationism viewpoint on origin of souls, then you would say that after the clone happens, God creates a soul and puts it in that body. That, I guess, means that it's a different soul than the first one. I don't know how that would work.
It's fascinating to think about.
Obviously, we would take issue with it being a suicide machine too, though, right?
Right, yeah. I mean
we wouldn't want people to go kill themselves just so they could be transported as maybe them, maybe not them.
And to be clear, I don't think this kind of transporter will ever really exist.
I don't either.
So my last question, I guess, before we wrap this up, is can we create a human being without a soul? Providing that the first definition that you talked about, Ben, was the right one, that it had to be created through the parents. And this could even go to the topic of cloning nowadays. I mean, we can clone human beings. We could theoretically, we have the technology to do that. In cloning a human being, do we create another? Like, is it possible to create a human being that has no soul?
No.
Well, it depends on how you define human being, I guess. That's probably where you're going to go, right?
Sure, but yeah, I mean, human being biblically is body and soul. Mm-hmm. If you don't have both, you don't have a human.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
all I was saying no to initially.
Mm-hmm.
That's my issue with cloning, and I don't have an answer for how it works with animals, but I think I would, to go back slightly, because I was distracted earlier,
mm-hmm.
I would fit into the creationist, probably, I would think at this point, thing of how the soul comes into existence. So God creates the soul, or puts the soul into the body when it's in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think cloning the material part of a human, all the scientists know how to work with is atoms. And if we're all agreeing that the soul is more than just atoms, then cloning a human's atoms and replicating that into another human is not, or into another thing that resembles a human, sorry, is not going to simultaneously clone the soul, and therefore it's going to be lacking in its humanness.
Yeah.
Agreed. I also, someone said cloning animals, and I've held this view for a while now, and this is the first time in the last week, actually, that someone challenged me on it. And so, I don't know, maybe I'll change my mind on this, but for as long as I can remember, I've just thought animals don't have souls.
Mm-hmm.
Humans do,
yep.
Right? So if that's true, then yeah, you could clone an animal, but you couldn't clone a human. If you weren't able to clone the soul, I'm assuming that you're not able to clone the soul. I don't know if that's true mm-hmm. or not. But yeah, no, I would say for sure we can answer no. If the human being that is cloned does not have a soul, then it's not a human being. It's something else.
And yet we can't tell if it has a soul or not.
It's funny because some people would argue, Craig brought up the conversation from a few weeks ago. I think that was the CRISPR episode.
The CRISPR episode.
We won't go into that.
It's funny
right now.
Because some people, a large portion of Christians, I would argue, specifically one eschatological view, would argue that the human is the soul and only the soul, and that the body's not essential. And so they would probably argue even stronger than I would here. Because, you know, kind of like Tank said, the view that's typically espoused is, I am a soul, I have a body, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things I quote unquote pushed back on
mm-hmm.
back then. But I'd imagine those folks would have even more trouble with cloning a human and not cloning the soul.
Yeah. Anyway, fascinating discussion. I hope, and I'm sure we did blow some brains tonight. So if your brain has been expanded and confused by this entire discussion, I am very glad about that, because these are fun things to think about. So I think let's move on to wrap it up.
This has been Science Reformation. Okay, you guys have any recos this week?
I do. I'm going to reco a book that I thought of during the episode. It's called Everybody Wants to Go to Heaven, but Nobody Wants to Die. It's written by David Crowder, yes, the musician, and Mike Hogan, who was also in David Crowder Band as the violin player. Yeah, really cool book. Kind of talks about three things. The back says, to heal your broken heart, all you need is hope, community, and a little bluegrass music. But it's basically talking about the existence of the soul, and the fact that we aren't just bodies. And he kind of explores that from a cultural perspective, a scientific perspective, and a spiritual perspective. And it's one of the most creative, interesting books I've ever read. It's got bits of instant message conversations between authors. It's got these things called columns, which I won't spoil for you, but they are one of the most amazing literary things I've seen ever. They're not just visual columns, they're columns that interact later in the book. So if you're into something, like, it's a book about death and the existence of the soul after death, and yet I found it, I was laughing at points throughout that book. It was just really good. So if you're interested in this topic, it's not from a precept perspective necessarily, but a very interesting take on these kinds of things.
I would like to recommend Clash Royale.
You've heard of those people.
Actually, I'm not one of those people, which is why I'm recommending it.
Ah.
If you've heard of Clash of Clans, it's one of the most popular iOS games that uses horrible marketing to try and get people to play it. And I've never played it.
I have.
But
it's not a bad game.
Have you?
Yes.
Good. I've heard it's good. Lots of my friends play it. It's not a like ethical objection or anything. I just never have played it. But the creators of Clash of Clans, Supercell, made a new one that came out a few weeks ago, maybe last week, called Clash Royale. And it's more of like a tower defense, sort of, but you're trying to destroy the towers and you're sending... I guess that's what tower defense is. Anyway, yeah, it's great. And it's, you know, the same characters from Clash of Clans. I've never played it, but I like Clash Royale a lot. And I've been playing that, and so it's fun. So check that out on iTunes or Google Play. If you would like to contact us, you can jump in our Slack channel, which is the best way to contact us, at slack.techreformation.com. You just go to the web address, sign up, you'll get an email with more instructions. If you have trouble, just reach out to us on Twitter and we will help you get in, and that's at Tech Reformation.
You can like us on Facebook, that's facebook.com/techreformation, and share our posts and like us and get us up on the algorithm on Facebook.
Yay, algorithms.
Woo!
And you can also visit our website, techreformation.com. You can check out the tags for latest for past episodes, and search by topic in that one.
You can also email us at ask@techreformation.com. Email us your thoughts, your qualms with us talking about presuppositional apologetics on the show, or send us topics. Send us topics for
Why would anyone have qualms with us talking about that on the show?
I don't know. It's the perfect method of apologetics, so I really don't know. I'm just saying that to get people to email us. I'm so lonely.
Derek is fishing for hate mail. That's what he's doing.
Yep.
Well, not hate mail, but complaint emails.
Yep. I'm bored over here.
Don't forget to review us on iTunes and recommend us on Overcast. And if you like this music you're listening to, it's by the great Matthew Parker. Thanks for listening. This has been Tech Reformation, and we'll see you next week. Go.